Welcome back to Cut the Chat, Life Science Insider Podcast. Today, you've got two hosts, Kieran Canisius and Sabina Hutchison.
Welcome to the Zeus Plus Life Science Insider, the podcast where biotech strategy gets real. I'm Kieran Canisius, and today we're flipping the script. It isn't your typical episode. The wonderful podcasts we've had over the last more than a year, I believe, Sabina,
have been
all audio. But we're actually going to do something different from now, and we want to do this a little bit untraditionally, kind of who we are. So this season, we're bringing a new format. It's a video-first approach. We are actually going to show what we do. It's going to get even more real because you'll be able to see who's saying the words they're saying as well. So today, to kick it off, we're not interviewing a guest. We are interviewing each other. And on top of that, it is unscripted. So I'll be interviewing Sabina, and Sabina will be interviewing me. We've spent over a decade in the biotech trenches. Actually, we're getting up to a decade and a half with Zeus. But we're probably going on to decades of being in this industry. And even today, we've had meetings together where we've been in those trenches, dealing with the challenges we have. We're navigating vendor selection, scaling clinical development strategies, identifying how to best achieve timelines and fix issues that were caused during setup racing. So today we're going unscripted, as I said, zero prep, all on cue, which is probably why this is a little bit more nerve-wracking than normal, because I don't know whether I'm going to bumble through my answers, but we're going to give you the real, which is what this podcast is all about. So let's start with some brief introductions. Sabina, do you want to go first?
I will introduce myself. For some of you out there that may know me, I'm Sabina Hutchison. For the others may not. Some of you may have known me when I was an employee at a company. Others know me as starting Zeus with Kieran. And today, what we're doing at Zeus and what I'm doing, what I love, is actually partnering with fantastic biotechs, which we really enjoy. And if I think about that, and I think about myself and my career, it's all about reinvention and changing and trying new things. And that's what we're doing also with Zeus, and what I do every day and what I love every day. Nothing fits into a nice, neat little box. And that's what I'm about. And that's what we're going to talk about today too, about not fitting into a nice, neat little box.
Thanks, Sabina. I think over the last, we're actually on our 20th year anniversary of being friends this
Holy
year.
Holy cow.
Yeah, crazy.
That's incredible.
Isn't it?
Yeah. When you actually
think
about
time,
like 20
we've been,
years.
At least for me, immediate besties and immediately tight in within the supplier world, really trying to figure out how to maneuver and build relationships with pharma and build relationships and understand from the vendor side. That was our world. That's what we had. But we also then even saw there's a better way to do this, right? There's actually issues in the selection process. There's issues in the way these relationships are built, managed, overseen, contracted, that are fixable. It's almost a shame we're dealing with problems that are actually avoidable, because most of what we do in clinical development, there's a big chance it doesn't happen just because the science isn't achieving what it needs to. It's just a shame when things go wrong because of organizational execution or because of contract or mismatch relationship or financial limitations. So I am Kieran Canisius. I am part owner of Zeus. I am in the biotech trenches with our biotechs, as well as with their investors, all focused on bringing life-saving treatments, of course, to the market. But what gets me up in the morning is really achieving those goals. How do we get there? What is in our way? How do we fix those problems? So exactly as Sabina said, there's never a same approach to everything. There's consistent issues. There is things to fix on a larger scale. But every asset is unique. Every team is unique. And every vendor has a good fit or not. So our work is never boring. That's for sure.
That is for sure. Every day
is an adventure. Is fun and games. At least if you love doing what you do, like we do, and our team does as well. So let's get into, for me, kind of the scary bit.
I've never been asked a question on our podcast before. I'm always asking questions. So,
ooh. Oh, look at that.
Well, I don't know if I'm ready for this. This is my first time.
So, before I put you in the hot seat, I want to do a quick reality check for our listeners. You might both know us as the co-CEOs of Zeus, but behind the scenes, we've navigated many biotech roller coasters. As I was saying this morning, we were both in a meeting that was definitely on some exciting, exhilarating part of that roller coaster. And we've been doing that for many, many years through vendor chaos and calls. And this is a chance for us to share some of that together to you, which we normally only are able to share one-on-one when you ask us questions. So this is a really exciting thing for us. So Sabina, you ready?
I think so.
So one of the things that I so hugely value is your dedication and your focus on what is the reality of the vendor side of the table. And I think we've always talked about this, that we've used examples of Zeus doesn't live in either camp. If you would think about our biotech and pharma sponsors and our vendors, that they live in two different worlds, and we talk them about having different shirts on and all of those types of things. And that we stand in the middle, 100% focusing on making sure that what they have agreed to achieve together is achieved. But one of the things you definitely do better than I is really understanding and navigating and seeing what's going on with the vendor side of that business. It's also probably because you've also had more years of experience on that vendor side that you have, and a more diverse experience in different types of vendors that gives you that holistic view. So after that long intro, my question is actually, what are you seeing currently in terms of trends within vendor selection, how they're changing, how they're doing things in order to attract and connect with those biotech companies? Or with sponsors in general. Mm-hmm. And how do you seeing that change over the last few years from the very typical standard RFP selection process?
Yeah, if I think back also, like when I did my very first, was on the vendor side of that coin and being, and how we presented ourselves and what we did. I definitely think things are changing. And it's interesting because we are, of course, very connected with the biotechs, and we're working with them and the vendors on that side. But we're also, we know what's happening in the industry. You know, we have friends that work in the industry. We have friends that work with our large pharma that are also from vendors. And it's interesting to hear sometimes the dynamics that happen in that space too, because there we hear these large pharmaceutical companies and the CROs having to work with them. It's process driven. It's financial driven. There's a different kind of dynamic when you I think a vendor or CRO works with a large pharmaceutical company than it does with a biotech. There, it's a different world. They're talking to different people. They're talking at different levels, and it's a much more, I think it's a very structured process. When you deal with biotechs, it's different. Every day is different. We experience that too, but that's what we love about it because that's their world, and we have to embrace that. And you go with it. That's life, and it's part of living in this space where everything is so agile. And I was thinking about this a couple of days ago. I was having this conversation about what a challenge it is for a vendor to actually have to do that, because you have to balance to have all of that type of, or that way of presenting, or that way of working in those processes for the large pharma, but you also have to be able to adapt and to work with that, the more agile. So it's a challenging space, and you can see it often at when we have partnership meetings or we see that interaction. They often want to bring in a completely the super senior levels into these meetings, and those are important, but the dynamics is different because the biotechs want to see who they're going to be working with. They want that engagement. They want that type of contact, that personal. How am I going to connect? The one client that we were talking about that we were in the meeting with this morning, they were very much about who's the project manager that I'm going to be working with. They're less focused on, do I have a connection with the CEO of the company, but more, what is my team going to do? How's my team going to engage with the partners at the biotech? So if you look at how things are changing, I think how vendors are showing up to the biotech meetings is we see them trying to get more real.
Yeah.
And want to connect more. And sometimes it's a challenge because they're still maybe over here in this box where they're having to present a bit differently and having to switch hats. So it's a challenge. And I think that the ones that are successful are bringing more of that human touch and that connection in and getting really real with the biotechs. Did I answer that question?
Yeah. I'm with you. I see that as well. And I think one of the things that I'm hearing now more back from different vendors is from executive level to say, we need to stop sharing what our standard process is in a bid defense or in a partnership meeting, but we need to actually say what we are going to do. I think that the whole selection process is generally, I would say, broken in a certain way, is that we have a standard process to follow, but at the end of the day, what every biotech is looking for is a partner who actually who has knowledge and is going to get in the trenches with them. And at that moment of selection, the way that works, if you have one out of five bid defenses you don't win, for example, or one out of three, is that you can't allocate all your best people to win and to actually really understand what is going on, because you'd be bankrupt. And that I think that balance between the two is very good. It's good to highlight that empathy that we have, need to have also for the vendor side, and also understanding what it is we're asking for when we add, let's do a sixth, seventh, or eighth CDMO or lab or CRO in a process. What does that mean in terms of weight on the other side?
To follow up on that, because you're so right, because we come back a lot and say, can we have one more call? Can we just have one more call? We need to discuss one more bit, because that flexibility is just so important, especially with these smaller clients. So it is true. So we do come back a lot more, and there's a lot more discussion when you think, oh, this is done and dusted. Not necessarily.
And I'm really intrigued what you said about the bigger companies, the big pharma together with big CRO, big CDMO, big everything, in order to make it manageable, controlled, and especially with the additional regulatory burden and the compliance burden that we are. I said the wrong word. Burden is probably not the way we want to describe it. It's a good thing that that the selection process and management and oversight is much more scrutinized, because it's what we said 14 years ago.
There's
a problem here that needs to be fixed, and I feel like the industry is starting to see that on the back as well of the regulations. But what I think I'm seeing with these bigger pharma and big biotechs is that they're trying to make of something that's very complex to a very fixed process, whereas we're going into an agile environment which requires agility, and even more so for these smaller companies where a significant unexpected change order can bankrupt and can stop the study.
Yeah, absolutely.
The allocation of either insufficient staff or an inexperienced staff actually makes the process near impossible to achieve. I think we have such a human thing, clinical development. Mm-hmm. It's such, every piece of data is touched, every piece is touched by a human multiple times, which means that's where the interaction is, which I'm kind of afraid that's where we're evolving to two different ways of selecting, but one is perhaps detrimental because we've eliminated the human interaction to it, but we'll see.
Yeah, for sure. Because we see it in some of the proposals as well, where someone is allocated like 0.0111. And we know that doesn't work.
You can wink at the sponsor. That's what you do.
Yeah, have a coffee and keep going. But I think, you know, back to your question about what we're seeing with the vendors that are successful are the ones that are saying, listen, you need this. And this is why you need this. And this is, we need to have more FTEs on this, not necessarily chop, chop, chop those crucial people out, but provide a rationale as to why this is going to help the trial be successful and maybe shorten it, or to think differently and not just get into this, oh, wait a minute, I've got this many FTEs, this is all I can allocate. We all understand that RFPs are mapped and there are reasons for that. But sometimes maybe take a look at that as well when you're going into working with a smaller biotech. Do you need to rethink about how you're mapping and how you're allocating FTEs for the studies? So it's also something to think about.
Hey, that's a whole nother podcast.
Yeah.
On just that question. I think that's there's a lot of talk and a lot of meetings and a lot of time spent on the outside rather than give me a minute, let me go fix the problem. Mm-hmm. It was a problem. We created the problem, we fixed it, and now that's how we're moving forward. But we tend to have all of these processes and procedures which kind of get in the way of just very simple elbow grease. And that makes this sound like a very small company mindset, but I 100% know that the success of a clinical trial or the success of a dog tox study, it's whatever it is related to the clarity and the elbow, the clarity, what needs to be delivered, and the elbow grease and the team and the expertise that's added, that is as important as the processes, the procedures, organizational structure behind it.
For sure.
So those are my questions. I could keep going and ask you for 600 hours.
I know, but those are like, we can loop around for those for a really long time, couldn't we?
Well, otherwise they'd have to listen to us for hours.
I know.
So that's why.
It's true. What time do we have? All right. Well, what I wanted to ask you about is that your connection, and you're talking a lot with investors now and also with the biotechs, so founders and biotechs. And do you also see in that dynamic and in that relationship, are there disconnects? And do you see things that need to be adjusted or changed also in those relationships?
It's so funny you say that, because that's one of the things that I didn't actually expect at all 10 years ago. I had actually had this idea that, because at that moment we were definitely functioning on leadership level in the biotechs, but we were not at all looking at the interaction with their funding, with the investors, with the background of that. We were in execution completely. And over the last few years, one of the things that I definitely see as a disconnect is that exactly same playing field that we see between a sponsor and all of their vendors also plays between a executive or a CEO and the CFO, the leadership team, and all of their investors. And that is also a distraction, is also a stressor, is also all the good it does. Without the finance, there would be nothing to execute, right? But it also adds complexity and conversations. Actually two things that come to mind, and I'm struggling in my own words to choose one. So I'm going to maybe say two, but let me first start with one thing that if I could pick out of a hat that would fix so many issues is this additional milestone or pressure to get to first patient in. So many problems are caused during selection, during contract negotiation, and mainly during setup. And because everyone is rushing around. If we think about how long it took to get the syndicate agreements behind the biotech financing, and then that signed, and then it's like a race, boom, and we're off to the races. And everyone just starts doing. And right. Even though they've been thinking beforehand, the moment that you have the money and that things need to happen, that's the moment that you actually get the capacity from the vendor. So as generous as many vendors are in order to, in essence, buy their way into having the confidence that you will work with them, you don't actually have access to all of their capacity until you actually sign a contract. It wouldn't be fair any other way, but that is the reality of it, right? So then everyone starts running around, standard procedures are rolled out, and everyone starts doing. And it's this craziness because a few months later, everyone goes, yeah, we did that because we needed to rush. We needed to get first patient in. We signed up one site, even though the systems weren't quite ready. But we got our first patient in. Everyone gets a gold star. Board is happy. Investors are happy. And for me, the moment I hear that, I'm like, oh, well, let's wait for all the issues coming out. And I think that's a shame. Especially compounded by the fact with the increase in regulations around data integrity and the increased risk that the portfolio companies from the investors and our biotech clients themselves face by not ensuring that they are aware of how their clinical system works. and how their data is collected. Mm-hmm. So if I could pick one thing, it would be to expand that moment of fundraising, funding signed, and execution is to actually have that same feeling of go, 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 but build into it a the time to do the things we need to do, like patient recruitment. Being behind in patient recruitment starts even before we sign the contract. And it's just something that people aren't aware of.
Yep.
So that's my one wish. The other one is that, and then I got laughed at 2 weeks ago by an investor. I said, I would love if risk management was actually something that was connected on board level at the start of a syndicate to say, what risks are you guys seeing, facing, et cetera? Not because I think a biotech, because I think a biotech for many cases should be left to do what they need to do, but that they actually can relieve some of the interaction and the pressure and give confidence and alignment by upfront saying, what are the risks that we are going to mitigate? What are we going to pay for and what are we not? Rather than trying to be perfect in every way, because we are on an unknown path with clinical development. We don't know what we don't know, and there will be risks along the way. And if we could align that layer, so I promise that in a few years, I hope that's going to happen. So that would be my wish. It's not something I want to change. That would be my wish, is that somehow we find a way, even though they're all from different, often from different teams, to align that risk. Did I answer your question?
Yep, you did.
Perfect.
You did. Yeah, that's so true. So true. And there we just need to take each of our questions and then we can have totally different sessions on these. We should actually have people come and ask us questions. Maybe that's something. Then we'd both be in the hot seat, like totally.
Oh, dear. I'm less stressed now that I'm just chatting with you. But before this morning, I was going, oh, my goodness. What's she going to ask? And am I going to sound like I know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
But yeah, this is what we do, right?
Yeah, exactly. This is what we do every day. I have another question, and it was, you recently wrote an article and you were talking about the vendor selection process and you made a statement. I'm going to read this because it was actually in, so I want to make sure I want to quote you properly. So you said that the vendor selection can quietly unravel everything a biotech has built up to the date. So feeds a little bit to what you're just saying. And I think it could be actually interesting for some of the listeners to hear if you can share a story, obviously confidentially, where potentially you've seen this happen.
Yeah. Sadly, more than one. One of the things that why Zeus is built the way it is because we know the importance of centering everything around risks. We know the importance of being very clear on the scope and the needs. We know the importance of identifying before we fall in love, so with our heads, why the data we are collecting is going to help us make a decision to the best vendor, right? So that's something that sits very deeply in us and what we do and how we think. We have many examples where the process has gone through like a checklist. So we asked 5 CROs, we sent out an RFP, it was a document, it looked great. Sometimes it came from my past company, right? Not mine, but that's the example. The paperwork is beautiful. And then they get to a decision and the decision is made and it just doesn't have any foundation. So we ask questions like, so tell me why, what is the added value of working with this vendor? Or what risks are they going to help you fix? Or worst so, a board or an investor comes in and says, hey, this is my partner. Sign up with him because we'll have better control. When at the end of the day, the complexity of what's being outsourced is substantial. And therefore, it's never fixed by only having the ability to escalate. It's never fixed by only having the experience in this area. And therefore, they're going to be able to know at least some of the challenges. It's never fixed by one thing. It's the whole of those things. There's a reason why our process is the way it is and why it emphasizes certain parts, because all of those things, I don't know very many really bad vendors at all. I really don't. I think that there is, in Dutch, you say that for every jar, there is a lid. And they mean that in marriage and in love. Mm-hmm. But I think in this case, it's also there is you need to achieve something, and therefore you go to a certain partner, even if you don't like them very much. That's not the point. The point is that they're going to deliver what you need, even if it's uncomfortable. Yeah. So when it unravels so easily and so quietly in vendor selection, it's when we go through a tick list process, when we go through a good process and then let something very left field influence us. Mm-hmm. And then struggle to identify later why it went wrong. And I think that's, it unravels silently because we get a nagging feeling already early on that maybe this wasn't the right choice, but we're not quite certain how to grab onto it again. And there is a semblance, if we think just about the CROs, it's a huge amount of work. They come in with an army. We've got 25, 50 people all of a sudden working for us as a biotech, maybe with 10. We've quadrupled our company and you get overwhelmed with meetings, emails, all of the things that happen. It's how do we take control of that moment? It unravels quietly in the vendor selection, but it explodes quite quickly in setup, even though we feel like we're treading water and we're running, getting all of it done, but the problems actually happen in execution. That's when we are past that phase. So Anne-Marie, our colleague, always says to me, yep, once we start to signal that we're behind in patient recruitment numbers, that problem started months and months and months ago. The fact that we're signaling it now doesn't mean that that's where it started. And I think maybe that's what inspired the unravels at vendor selection, because that's how I see it as well.
Yeah, so true. So true. It's not just a huge tick list that you go down, or it's so much more complex. Yeah. And it's interesting to see when people are like, what, you're going to do all of that? We're like, yep, we are. So buckle up, because you're going on a ride with us, and we'll promise the outcome is going to be really good. Yeah. Well, thanks.
Thank you. This was nice. So fun. Can we do it tomorrow again?
No. We're having a nice long Easter weekend, so no. But we'll definitely do it again. And thanks to everyone that's listening and that has listened to us in the past. We hope that you've got a couple of nice insights. So we're off episode one, season two, I think it is. So thanks for joining, and follow us on LinkedIn. You can connect with Kieran or myself if you have any questions or there's anything else you'd like to discuss. So feel free to do that. And you can also follow the Life Science Insider podcast on Spotify. I'm making new words. And Apple and YouTube, of course. So, and let us know if there's anything that you'd like to hear. Is there anyone that you think could be interesting for us to interview? So we're happy to take a lead on that as well. And we look forward to seeing you next time. Take care. Bye.
Bye.
We hope you enjoyed this week's episode of Cut the Chat, Life Science Insider. Make sure you're following SUSE Plus on LinkedIn and be the first to know about upcoming podcasts.